you did it. You're going to be on the podcast.
Okay, great. Awesome.
Welcome to Show Up or Shut Up with Wendy Solganic, also known as Willa.Wanders on Instagram. This podcast features real and raw conversation about the lives of prolific makers. What is really happening behind all of those gorgeous photos of art on Instagram? How we came to be prolific makers? What makes us consistently show up? And the very real challenges that we all face. This episode of Show Up or Shut Up is brought to you by the Willa Workshops, found at willawanders.com. Take a class in how to make your own Willa journals, have fun with a secret tag book, or enroll in our year-long mixed media art experience, Fodder School. These and many more outstanding courses are available right now at willawanders.com. Welcome to the podcast, Faggy. We're so glad to have you.
Glad to be here.
So, Faggy, you live in New York, correct?
That's right.
And your last name is Cobray?
Cobri.
Cobri. The reason that I've invited you to come on the podcast today is that you have a long history in involving yourself professionally with artists, art, and creative obstacles that people have. And I was talking to you the other day, and I just knew that you would be someone that I would want to have an in-depth discussion about the obstacles that people face with their creativity. And you've got some really interesting thoughts about that. But before we get into that, I want you to tell us who you are, what you do professionally, and just anything that you feel like, you know, the people who listen would be interested in knowing.
Okay, sure. So who I am, I'm a grandma. I can't even believe it. You know, it's funny because I am 62 years old, but I don't like telling people that because then they're going to really think I am, you know, so.
Like, what do you mean?
I'm still 25. What do you mean? I can't say I'm 62.
Okay, so you feel young.
I certainly feel young. You know what? I think I've discovered that most people do. You know, my mother is in her 80s and she talks about growing up in the 40s when she was in Philadelphia. And I know she certainly can't wrap her head around the fact that she's, you know, 84. So it's just wild. It's just, you know, age is really just a number. That's what, but it's still, you know, when you're a kid and you look at people that are 62, that's ancient. So it's like very hard for me to even realize that I'm
to
that
think
age.
We're part of the ancient right, world right, now.
Right. Right. Anyway, so professionally, I trained as an early childhood educator. I went to this, if anybody out there is in education, you might have heard of Bank Street College of Education. It's a really very good school in Manhattan, New York City. It's been a very, very leading school, very progressive education. So they're very, very anti in the arts. They're very anti any kind of like cookie cutter, copycat kinds of crafts. So when we were learning like art for teachers, it was really just allowing the kids to do art and be creative, collage and painting without any kind of predetermined craft, because they felt that that was like not developmentally appropriate for kids. So I became a preschool and an early childhood educator, and then I was a director for a few years. And very much what was always my focus, what I loved, was the art. There's a lot of different things you're doing in education, but I just loved the art and giving the kids all of the different mediums and things to play with, and just watching their creativity, and just also watching how things change as they grow. I actually had a very interesting story that I remember, because I'm very into, at one point what I used to do was also, I used to give workshops for schools and how to bring this type of art into their schools, because a lot of people, they may be wonderful teachers, wonderful schools, wonderful curriculum, but they just don't get the whole idea of allowing the kids to create at their own developmental level. People just have a really hard time with it. That's why you'll have all the little, you know, the caterpillars with egg cartons, like the same types of things that you'll see in schools all over the places, because people just don't understand it. They don't have the patience to allow kids to create. Just the same way there's developmental milestones, a kid will sit before they walk and they will crawl before they run. In art, there are certain stages that kids go through, and people don't have the patience for it, because it's very messy when a 2-year-old and a 3-year-old and sometimes even a 4-year-old is doing art. The stuff is very, very messy, and our society is so into representational art that people have a hard time with it. So they brought crafts into these young ages and they allow them to just create this way. So I had a kid once, I was teaching 5-year-olds, and a little boy that had come over from another country, he was a very bright kid, he had a very high IQ, and he would go over to the easel and he was painting. He started painting, and first he painted like a 3-year-old. And then he did that for a few weeks. And then because he was already 5, then he painted like a 4-year-old. And within a couple of months, he started making on his own some representational pictures. He'll have, you know, the stick figures and things like that. And that was just showing us that we need to go through these stages. And if we don't, then we really, it just, our creativity gets repressed. So I'll go back to that in a minute. But what happened, okay, so then I was a preschool director, and then I stopped teaching to raise my kids. I have 6 children, everyone's married but one. I have a bunch of grandchildren. And then I was also always very interested in photography. And this was something I can do. It wasn't full time. So this was something I can do while I was raising my family. So I started learning like high-end photography. But the way it works in that field was you don't go to like a school. You go to like week-long courses. And I started dragging babies with me to conferences. I once went to Chicago with a baby, and now we'd be pushing that baby in the back, getting him to sleep. And I started a photography studio, and I learned how to do like very high end. I was, you know, that's what I learned from these photographers, and I was a very expensive. And I did that for a really long time. I did that for 25 years, And then at one point, I think it was in about 2006 or 2007, that was, the internet was fairly new then. And I was online and I came across a course, like how to do internet marketing. And I said, oh, that would be so fascinating. I bet my daughters, who were like in their late teens at the time, maybe even early 20s, I don't even remember. I said, let me get that for them. I bet they'd be interested in that. And I bought it. It came all shrink wrapped. No downloads at that time. And they didn't have any interest in it. You can't order something for your children or anyone without knowing if they have an interest. So it sat in the shrink wrap on my shelf until I decided, guess what? I am going to learn this. And I opened it up and I started going through it, and I was very fascinated. And I wanted to learn internet marketing. And one of the things, like they tell you in writing, that if you're going to be a writer, write what you know. So here in internet marketing, I was trying to create some kind of information product. So they said, you have to create what you know. And what did I know was art in early childhood education. So I put together like an ebook and a couple of ebooks actually. And then I started a website. But what happened was I had this website. And you have a website, you have to be posting pictures and content. And I didn't have any of that because I really wasn't doing that much of the art. So I happened to be speaking to a friend of mine that we went to graduate school together, and we had the same educational philosophies. And she had just started with somebody, a small private school in my area. And they didn't even have a first grade. Maybe they didn't even have a first grade yet. The next year was going to be a first grade. They only had an early childhood center. And I said to her, I said, you know what? I think I'm going to be your art teacher next year because I needed content. So she said, great, because she knew that I was on her line of thinking. And the next year I started with two classes. There was a first grade, I think, in the kindergarten. And I started doing art and I started taking pictures of it and I started posting to it. So I had this new a job as a part-time art teacher. And then I was starting my internet career with this art. So what happened was with the art, it comes to a point where you don't really know what you're doing and you start taking courses to help you with the marketing. And I was taking a course on how to market this website. And I was explaining, so back to what I was talking about when teachers don't allow kids to create according to the developmental level, I was talking to this, one of my coaches, I was talking to her about this whole idea is a lot of the reason why people don't feel creative when they're adults is because their creativity wasn't allowed to develop at a natural level. There are other reasons also. There are people that may have a good early years and then they're in school and, you know, and a lousy art teacher will say something nasty to them or their parent won't be supportive and will say, you know, people think that if you don't know how to draw representationally, you're not worth anything art-wise. And I was talking to her about this whole idea because when you're not allowed, kids don't feel trusted. When you can't let them create the way they're supposed to at their stage, when they're not ready to do things that they're being given, then they really kind of lose interest and just don't feel that they're creative. So I was talking to this coach of mine and, she said to me, would you consider starting a site for adult creativity and kind of show them what it's, you know, why they're feeling so bottled up and why they feel they don't feel they're creative. I said, that's very interesting. I certainly will explore that. And I started doing research on adult creativity and I kept coming across this term mixed media. Mixed media art, what is this? And I started taking books out of the library. And then if I liked them, I would buy them. And then I started my next hobby, buying art supplies. You can certainly relate to that. And I started getting into mixed media and I was just like totally hooked. And I started a small class in my house and I started this website, this Creativity Reignited. Which by the way, is a good place. I have a free video on there for my, you know, for getting started with alcohol links, which we'll talk about. And so then what happened was I was into mixed media, but I was always looking on the library site for more books, more techniques. What else can I get? Because I was just, I felt like a drunk in a liquor store. I would get so excited about it. I guess you can relate, but I can't even describe the thrill I would get out of just reading these books and just getting involved in it. And then one day I was looking through my website of mixed media, all of a sudden this book jumped out at me. It was called Pigments of Your Imagination, all about alcohol inks. And I said, what is that? And I ordered that from the library and then I bought that and then I started buying them and I was hooked. And, you know, that's in a nutshell. And what I discovered with alcohol inks is that alcohol inks is a great entry for people who really don't feel artistic and they want to be able to get into it. Mixed media is great and I still do mixed media and I love it, but there's something about alcohol inks because you use the right colors and you learn how to not muddy things up. You can't really go wrong. So many people have said they just feel like an artist when they use it. And it's just an amazing, magical medium. So I've kind of made that my focus.
It's all making a lot more sense to me now. Now that you've gone through your whole story with the background about, you know, children and the freedom and all of that. And then that's why your focus now is on these alcohol inks. It's making a lot of sense to me why you've chosen alcohol inks as a focus.
Okay.
Because I think you are onto something here as far as people want to be creative, and a lot of people don't, they're confused by their own need to be creative, and they don't know how to overcome something that is blocking them. So I want to describe some things that keep coming up within a particular community that I host on Facebook. So people who listen to the podcast, they totally know that I have a Facebook group. It's called Conscious Creativity for Mixed Media Artists.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just an open forum. It's a free Facebook group where anyone could come in at any time who's in the group and just say, hey, I'm struggling with this particular thing. Does anyone have any advice? Because there's so many artists in it that chances are someone in there will have overcome, you know, the block that you're having. But I want to tell you something, the honest truth about it. Very few people are coming into the group and saying, help me. I want to overcome this thing. So even though I encourage people and I say, hey, you're in the group. You came here for a reason. You said that you were struggling with, you know, something. That's how you got into the group. But almost no one is really even like taking the initiative, I guess, is what the thing is. Like, they're not taking the initiative. There's a part of them that is artistic and wants to be an artist and wants to have fun and play with art, but they don't, no one, myself included, it's not like I'm an expert. I don't know anything about the stuff that you know about. So you're coming on here, and I think that we're going to get some really good insights into where these blocks started for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe some help on where people can go. So, all right, I'm just going to start asking questions.
Sure.
But now that you have like where we've got what your interest is, and I've got this like passion project of mine is just try to connect artists mm-hmm. with their creativity. So a lot of people are buying a lot of art supplies.
Right.
They become like expert collectors. And they have a beautiful room in their house full of organized, meticulous, you know, this line of thing in every single color, every paper, you know, scrapbookers get very into this.
Right.
But then they say when they go into their art studio, they feel completely and utterly at a loss at what to do, or blocked at even wanting to try.
You know, it's funny, Wendy, because I remember before I even got into any art, I just remember walking into Blix, or does anybody remember Pearl Paint?
But I
remember walking into Blix and I feeling this certain like desperation, like dying to use materials, but just not knowing what to do with them. You know, so I think we had this conversation when we were speaking the other day is to a certain degree, I think what happens is there are people that are born knowing how to draw. I have a nephew like that who was literally born with a pencil in his hand. He can draw any portrait, the most realistic thing, right? There are also people that are born knowing how to play, like Mozart, like Beethoven, right? They didn't have to learn their scales to know how to do it. But for some reason, in music, let's say, nobody thinks that art should only be for the people that know how to play, have perfect pitch, right?
Right.
But in art, you only can do art if you know how to draw. And that has become like the joy and the pleasure and the fun has been taken out of art. If you can't draw a person, or you can't draw a horse, or you can't do something realistic, I think that's why your fodder school and you, the stuff you do is so successful, is because it's non-representational. People who you know, it's just, you don't have to get it right. Like you say, it can be imperfect. And, you know, that now you can learn how to draw. The, you know of the Betty Edwards drawing on the right side of the brain, right?
Right, right. I learned how to draw. I went to art school. Like, I went from not being able to, like, I am not natural at drawing at all. I am the person who can't do it on my own and has to really, like, try really hard. And if I try really hard, I can do it. But I've just decided at age 51 that when something is so hard to do, it probably doesn't need to be done by me. And it's okay if I just stick with the non-representational craft.
Right, right. Because drawing is great if you want to put in the work.
It's right. But here's what work. Here's the thing. Back it up a little bit. The people who come into my group, these people know that messy art is okay. They're not in there because they want to do representational art. We're not, I know what you're talking about. That is a phenomenon that to me is more understandable than the phenomenon of the person who they're on Instagram. They are very well aware of the movement of abstract, messy, grungy, like, art journaling. There is a proliferation of really accessible art making. There are lots of groups that focus on this.
Mm-hmm.
And even knowing that it's okay to make childlike art, that it's beyond okay. It's at this point on Instagram, in the communities that I kind of hang out in on Instagram,
mm-hmm.
it is the preferred way of making art.
Uh-huh.
Is just messy, imperfect, childlike. I mean, do you know there's some artist, I forget who it is, who said some kind of famous quote about that the ultimate form of making art is to return to the type of art that you would make like when you were a child, like the freedom and the
mm-hmm.
the non-conscientiousness of it, like not trying to be or do something, you know, like you describe, like the kids and the messiness and that stage, that developmental stage. There's some really famous artists, like it was either Picasso or Matisse or one of them,
uh-huh.
that basically said the ultimate thing that an artist can do is return to that childlike state.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a huge movement now of people who are really, really embracing that.
Uh-huh.
So I think that the people who are in my group, they already know that it's okay to be messy. They're still blocked.
You know why though? Also, because maybe they know it on one level, but when you have so many years of conditioning and you were, it's not even just in art, but I don't know if you've heard, there was a fellow named Daniel Pink that wrote a book called The Whole New Mind. I remember reading a number of years ago. And he talked about the importance of having kids develop a way of thinking and creatively. And our schools, have you seen that TED talk by Sir Ken Robinson?
No.
Do our schools kill creativity?
Maybe a long time ago.
Yeah, so that was a very famous. It's been seen, I don't know, millions of times. But he talks about how our schools kill creativity. And when you are not allowed to think on your own. Okay, I'll give you a classic example. When I was in education, I was being mentored and I was in school. I remember one of my mentors saying how she went into like a more traditional school and she went into, I think it was like a second grade classroom, and she was a substitute and she was giving them a break and she gave them just some art supplies. I don't know, pens, markers, papers. And she sat down at her desk to do some work. She told them they could create something. And after a while, she looked up and nobody was doing anything. And she said, "What's going on?" They said, "You didn't tell us what to do." Our schools have killed any kind of initiative and independence and creative thinking. So we are so blocked. We just need those. You know, that's why these paint nights, you know, these paint nights are so yeah. popular, because they don't have to think. Of course, there are people looking over the shoulders of everybody else to see whose is better. And that's why I hate them also, because I could never stand when, kids are comparing. In my job, I don't let the kids copy from each other. I try to get them to think on their own and to get them to create. So we have a whole generation of women and people out there who are really suffering from not being able to think on their own. You do have the independence and the very successful artists who are able to do that, but the whole world of people like us who want to create, and there's like a fear of failing, is a fear of rejection, someone's not going to like it, it's a fear of knowing what to do. I have it myself. I'm definitely a product of my upbringing, where I also get this panic in terms of, you know, what to do. So like we were discussing the other day, is that even though I don't necessarily like these paint parties when everybody has to do something, when I give my classes, I have a little class in my house, there's a few years already, a bunch of ladies come to do mixed media. I give a basic general idea, and I definitely give some kind of direction, because people panic when there's no direction, but there has to be enough choice within direction. And that's one of the reasons I have a little bit of a hard time. What's very, very popular also is this intuitive painting. I have a bunch of books on it, and that puts me into a panic. When I have to do like an intuitive painting and I have no structure and no guidance, I literally can feel heart palpitations. It brings me back when you were a kid and you don't know exactly what to do. So I really think we're really suffering from our education and what it has done to us.
Have there been like studies done where there were like two populations of children and one was allowed to just go through school, you know, creating whatever they wanted, art supplies provided, come into the room, make a mess, and see how this population developed over time, as opposed to the children who got like, here's your project, here's your egg carton,
right?
You know, make art like this. Because I'm just going to be totally honest with you, I thrive in egg carton, like in the egg carton world.
Exactly. I don't see that in your work, Wendy. I see stuff that you give out there's a lot of room for choice and individualization.
There is room for choice. There is room to individualize. But for me, again, okay, so I need to just explain this. I don't know if you've ever listened to my podcast before.
Yes, I have.
Talk about this, but basically the model of fodder school is essentially me as the primary student of fodder school. It's like I pick and choose artists that I want to learn from that inspire me. And those are the fodder school instructors. And I let them have, you know, a huge, like, they can do whatever project they want. They can demonstrate whatever fodder they want. It's not like I'm telling them what to do, but I'm looking at their work and I'm saying there's something about their work that really inspires me and I would love to learn from them. And also there is a structure that I created that is a structure that I thrive in. And I just figured, hey, if I thrive in this structure, maybe there's other people who might thrive in it also. Now, let me just keep going on this.
Uh-huh.
I realize this structure is not for everyone. There are people who need to have complete freedom, right? And be given just materials and say, make whatever you want. And I love that. Those people should not join fodder school.
Right.
It's not a complete, like, do whatever you want. We are a project-based curriculum. So it's like, we're going to show you how to do things, and then we're going to show you a project. I'll give you an example. Fodder School 2 is coming, and November of Fodder School 2, our instructor is Drew Steinbrecher, and he's going to be demonstrating how to
Jelly printing. I love jelly printing. Stuff.
Love that. So, right. There's a lot of freedom and creativity in jelly printing, right?
Uh-huh.
Super fun. Like, here's the materials. Let me show you some techniques and then you go to town.
Right.
So that's very creative for people. They can really take that in a lot of directions.
Uh-huh.
But then the project itself is, it's his signature thing that he does. He takes jelly prints and he covers children's board books with jelly prints. And then you have a really beautiful book that you've created at the end.
But it's not a copycat. It's not a paint night.
No, you're not trying to represent Drew's art. Like, there's no thing that says, like, your book should look like Drew's book.
Right.
But we are showing a project of, like, you're going to use paper to cover a children's book.
So it makes sense. Yeah, but I don't have a problem with that. I don't have a problem with that because what I'm saying is that as long as there's room for you to go off and, you know, like you see pictures of people at the paint nights and everyone's holding up their pictures and everyone's look the same. If everyone would be in his class, in Drew's class, and they would make a book, they would not look the same at all. Right. Everyone's would look different.
And they do.
As long as there's enough room for individuality and choice, I think it's fine. I also like that.
Okay, so that's so interesting. So Fodder School is like straddling those two things.
Right.
And that's where I thrive. Like,
right.
I don't have creative block. And I'll just say this and you can tell me what your opinion of it is. But for me, I would have creative block if I had an expectation of myself that I was supposed to walk into my studio full of all the mixed media supplies that anyone could ever ask for. If I walked in and I said to myself, what do you want to make today? If I said that to myself, I would have creative block because it would take me months to figure out what I want to make and how I want to make it.
Yes, me too.
So I really like sort of just trusting the process that other people bring. And I say, okay, I'm going to give up the total freedom to make whatever I want because I know that in structure is where I actually do find freedom. I find freedom, like you've noticed, in Fodder School, mm-hmm. where I get to choose my colors, I get to choose my patterns, I get to choose how I do the thing, but someone else has decided like this is the project.
Right. Right.
So how does that?
I'm not arguing.
No, I know you're not arguing. Yeah. I want to have a discussion about this because yeah. I've been wondering, like, yeah, finally you showed up in my life. I'm wondering how all of this is working, like psychosocially. Do you know? Like, I wonder why this works well. And I wonder, you know, why some people, like Fodder School for some artists would be a nightmare, right? It's like, that is the last thing that they want is to be told, here, do this right. project. Because, and I respect yeah. those people.
You know what? Maybe they don't have the same traumas. Not everybody has creative. I read another book called Creative. In my research, I'd read a lot of books. There was a book called Creative Confidence by two fellows. I don't remember what the name was, but they talked about the fact that most people have creativity scars in some form or another.
And I've never met someone who doesn't.
Right. You know who doesn't? The people who can't stand having any kind of structure and they're okay just getting out there and creating and don't have blocks. Those people.
Okay, so now I want you to re-explain what you were talking about in the beginning of this conversation about how the art experiences that we have as children are essentially what you're saying is they are creating the situation where most of us want to be told, do this project.
Right. Okay, so let me give you a example on the side. I have a grandson who never crawled. He went from sitting to walking. And as a result, the OT warned my daughter that he was going to have certain gross motor issues that she's going to have to work with because he didn't go through all those stages that he needs in his gross motor development. Okay. So in speaking, I have another daughter who's a speech therapist, and kids, you know, this, I remember when I was in graduate school, I had a study on how kids develop language, how they learn how to speak. First they do this, and then they do that, and then do that. Kids that miss developmental stages, that's why there's so many therapists nowadays. I'm not even talking about psychologists. I'm talking about OTs and PTs and speech therapists, because when people miss developmental steps, it has to be fixed. What happens is when kids are developing in art, first, their first thing that they have to do is experience the medium. They have to, you give them the crayons, you give them the markers. They have to see what happens. I remember when one of my kids was in a very good preschool program. She was 3 years old. It was a very young program. She had a very good teacher, and I was there watching. And she went, a kid came over to a table where they had set up some circles and some glue. And the kid took one circle and put it down and stuck it down. The teacher came over and sat down and picked it up and turned it over. And she said, "Look, it sticks." Adults don't realize that kids have to learn what the mediums do. Glue sticks things. Markers make marks on paper and on walls, unfortunately. All of the materials, okay? So what they're doing is they're just experiencing the material. Now, what happens is, if they're two or three, this is going to go on for a very long period of time. And when I've given my workshops to the teachers, I remember there was a period of time I was giving to like a group of three-year-old teachers, four-year-old teachers, and five-year-old teachers together. And I used to say, working as a three-year-old teacher is hard because you cannot have any expectations of them. When they're five, they start making amazing things and they're very creative. People do not have the patience to allow the kids to go through the proper developmental cycles they need in order for them to develop healthily with art. So if they're allowed to do this, then they're allowed to paint. And three-year-old and four-year-old, they're just covering the easel. They're covering their paint with paper. They're just making messes. And then slowly, when they're allowed to have choice and they're allowed to do this, you give them collages and shapes, and all of a sudden you start seeing thought. You start seeing them arranging their papers in a border or on top of each other. And then the next thing you know is they're starting to create representational objects out of their collage people. They're drawing people. They're drawing scenes of things that happen. When we as adults come in, parents and teachers, and we just want that product. No, three-year-old, no, I want you to have that egg carton caterpillar. No, I want you to have this tent or whatever else it is. We are inhibiting our kids. And when they get to adulthood, then we can't do it. But if they're allowed to progress the way they need to, they will have a much healthier sense of self in art. Otherwise, they get to first grade, whatever age they get to. Me, I can't draw. There's some kids that naturally can draw, and me, I can't. And I am, I give up and I give, you know, and that's the beginning of what happens to people is, and that's what's so wonderful about people, let's say with my alcohol links, people are going back to the beginning. Let it flow, let it play. But then because of what they went through, you know, I have started also with my alcohol links, I have started doing things like adding like mixed media stuff into it. I've started adding gold leaf, I'll drip, and then I'll pick only two colors, and then I'll add gold leaf, and I add doodling, and just creating like mixed media pieces with alcohol ink. But people are suffering from these creativity scars, and there are people that don't. There are people that are naturally artistic, that know how to draw from a very young age. They just can go, or else sometimes you have, there's a woman who has a website, The Artful Parent. I have her book. I've followed her for years. She, you know, writes about this, and she gives all the creative experiences you should be giving your kids. And I'm sure her kids are just able to sit down with materials and just create because they've had so much experience with their materials, and they saw what works and they saw mistakes, and they're allowed to decide what they're going to do and what they're not going to do. And those are the people that don't struggle and not struggling with the blank page, but the rest of us are, because we were not allowed to develop. And you know, these things follow you up until you die, because it's not, unless you go through really, really, one of the things I do in my class is we use clay. We use this air dry clay. Once you make the clay and it dries, it's really hard. And it looks like, forget it, but there is a way to get that clay back soft to work with again. You have to break it down and pour water over it and let it sit, and then it'll be malleable again. So we can get there. We just have to be able to really get into it and realize and talk to ourselves also, I'm okay. This is okay. I don't have to know how to draw like, you know, Matisse, Picasso, whatever it is.
Let me see if I'm understanding where this goes. So as children, we are not allowed to go through the natural developmental developmental phases of art expression.
Mm-hmm.
And also trauma happens. So it's not just that we're told make this egg carton caterpillar, but also most of us at some point have been told something related to art making that is kind of traumatizing.
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're saying is that when adults have a feeling about art and art supplies that is very exciting to them, and they fill their home with these things, and they don't use these art supplies, the block is coming from stuff that is from way, way, way deep into the past.
Yes.
So the first thing that you're saying is, of course, you can't just walk in your studio and begin to cook something up from scratch because you've never even been allowed to develop that skill.
Right.
Of course you haven't, because most art, you know, in the United States at least, is not taught in that way, that freedom of expression way.
Right.
So people shouldn't have the expectation of themselves that they should just be able to do that, because I think what happens is people look at other artists and they have an impression about how that artist creates what they create. And they just make an assumption that people are just walking into a room and just creating like that, like out of thin air, out of magic.
Mm-hmm.
And they think, well, how come I can't do that? Like, what is causing me to not be able to do that? And what you've just exposed what it is, it's that that's a skill that people would have developed as children that is never developed.
Right.
So that's where I think the incredible advancement has been made, and the incredible demand has been created, and proliferation of online adult course content, you know, as it is today. Like, there's just an incredible number of online art courses.
Uh-huh.
And for me, for whatever reason, based on whatever level of trauma I had, you know, which was a little, but not a lot or whatever. And I have been able to really tap into online art courses as a way for me to fulfill my need to be artistic without ever feeling blocked, because I never put the expectation on myself that I have to come up with something out of thin air.
Uh-huh.
There are other people that have the access to all the art courses and the art materials and still feel blocked. That's what's confusing to me, just because that hasn't been my experience.
You know, I think, Wendy, it has to be on a case-by-case basis. You know, like, you have to really speak to somebody individually. You know, it could be somebody could just be a very non-confident person and is just not going to feel confident about anything. You have you really have to talk to somebody to see what's going on with you. What is it? Sometimes it's deeper. Maybe, maybe they had real trauma. I mean, there are, I listened to a podcast once with, I think it was Carla Sunheim. You know who she is?
Yes.
Okay. I'm pretty sure she was the one that said that her mother told her when she was a teenager or something that her artwork was really no good. And she did not create for years. You know, one negative word from a parent, yes, of ours can be so, you know, life-altering. It could make us stay away from something. So it's, you know, people really in a certain way have to figure out for themselves, you know, what is going on. You know, a lack of confidence, you know, the trauma. It's very hard to say across the board. You know, we can say that for the most part, we either got, you know, a trauma from early years or a little bit later years. There's a lot of stuff that have going. People are so complicated and there's so many layers. But it's really, it's something that people can think of. And my point about the clay is it can be fixed the same way you found a way. I think people have to find their way. Let's say there are people that love this intuitive painting, right? They take classes. There's so many, I have so many books and so many people that give classes with intuitive painting. I don't like things like that. The kind of stuff that you do is much more appealing to me because I also need a structure. I also have, but, and it's funny, it's been hard for me to come to that realization also, because when I was in the education phase, it was either or. It was either you do these cookie cutter crafts, or it was either just let them do whatever they want. And I have realized, and I do it in my own teaching, in my elementary school classes, I give some kind of parameters. Like even I've told when I've given workshops for the early childhood teachers, I'll tell them, if you give them a plate full of shapes, geometric shapes to paste, you can just leave it and some kids will do great with it. But you can always give ideas, but make sure you give at least five. So I'll say to the kids, you have all these shapes. So what you can do is you can make a border with them. You can stack them. You can make a person. You can make a truck out of them. You can make a house. You can just make a pretty design or anything else. So I'm starting them off by knowing, oh, I can do this or I can do that, but I don't have to. I don't have to follow exactly. And there's those, and there's, you know, there's different kids. There's some kids that don't need any help and they're off and running. And I see it because I teach a lot of kids and I see how some kids are just full of creativity and all they need is the materials. And there are other kids that need more direction. And, you know, everyone has to find out, where are you on the spectrum and what do I need that's going to fulfill it? Because I really, really believe that creativity is a basic human need. It's something that people need. There's another book I read called The Creativity Cure. It was written by two doctors married to each other. And, you know, they're talking about like what creativity does for people's mental health, And it's not only just the creativity, it's also the making, the using your hands, the handwork. So crocheting and knitting, which are not necessarily so creative, even though I'm sure it can be, it's the using it and then the creativity. It's like two parts to it.
Well, you know, I'm 100% like all about that, is like just the healing power of making things and
right,
where your brain goes and all that. But I think something that you mentioned that I just don't want to let like go by without really stopping and pointing this out is what I heard you say, and it really hit me, is every single person is an individual with an individual story and individual traumas and individual personality types and all of these things. And when it comes to creativity, that we should never expect that there's like a one size fits all fix.
Mm-hmm.
And that if someone really feels blocked and that they really feel very strongly like they want to have a creative practice in their life, that actually working with some type of therapist on a one-on-one individual, let's talk about my history and my past, is really what would help someone progress.
Right.
Because there is no one size fits all cure for this.
Right.
which there are, it hadn't occurred
to me. There are creativity coaches. There are creativity coaches. I would love to do that myself.
Help. So where do people find creativity coaches? Because that seems like something that the people who gravitate toward me would be looking for. And I am not that thing. I'm also one of the people. I mean, I don't have a block, but I'm like, I'm not an expert. I just want to learn about this because it's so fascinating.
Right.
So how would people find a creativity coach? Right.
It's funny. It depends. It depends what you mean, because let's say an art therapist, because I have a friend that really wanted to be an art therapist. And I find that a lot of what I do, and I'm sure what you do also, there's a lot of therapy. Like, I have one woman that has been coming to my class for years, and she tells her husband it's cheaper than therapy. But on the other hand, if you want to be a real art therapist, you need training as a therapist as well. You need an art degree and you need degree as therapy. So if somebody really, really wants to go deep into their psyche with real therapy, then they probably should be looking for an art therapist. There are I myself am trying to, like, what my goal is, I want to do creativity coaching through Alcohol Inks. My dream is to get people to tap into their inner, you know, stuff, and get through it through Alcohol Links, and then go on, move on to something else. I have a student who we did Alcohol Links together, and now she's taking oil painting classes. She said she never would have had the confidence to do it if she hadn't done the Alcohol Links first, because it freed her.
So That's fascinating. So I think what I hear you saying is Alcohol Links don't have a really big like obstacle to getting started with them.
Right.
And the method, the technique, it doesn't require a lot of skill. Once someone shows you, like, this is how the method works, here's the paper you use, here's the, you know, the alcohol ink that you use, now go and experiment and have fun. Kind of similar to the jelly plate.
One minute. Like, no, but because of my interest and my realization, as you say, how I need a structure, I have developed like a kind of a sequential way of doing it. Now you can do this. Now we could use stencils. How do you use stencils with Alcohol Inks? There's a whole bunch of ways of doing that. How there are people that's very big in Alcohol Inks is using a blow dryer to make all of these wispy types of things. So I have really made it in a sequential way to give people, there's so many ways to use Alcohol Inks, because a lot of times people start with Alcohol Inks and they drip, and they do that a little bit and they make some mugs out of it and they say, now what? There are a lot of ways to use Alcohol Inks, and you can get your creativity out in so many ways. And once you're finished with that, you know what? There is a huge group of women out there who do realistic paintings with Alcohol Inks that are absolutely magnificent. You have to learn how to use it because it's hard to control. You have to use extremely tiny bits of Alcohol Ink to use that. You know, that's one way to do it. But my point is, I teach people how to use Alcohol Inks to its fullest. Let's do it with gold foil. Let's do it with mixed media. You can do it on a jelly plate. You can do it with my Scan and Cut. You can make stickers. You can do with varnish. You can do it so many ways to use it. And when you finish with that, if you don't want to really make so many things with it, good. Now go on to the next thing. If you haven't done
it. And the purpose of it is to break through that barrier.
Right.
Overcome the fear and the perfectionism. A huge problem.
Exactly.
Is perfectionism. So let's just talk about that.
Yeah.
So many people, I think the perfectionism comes from a human evolutionary desire to be valued and fit in with your tribe and your pack. So we are constantly subconsciously comparing ourselves to other people.
Right.
Making sure we fit in. We don't go too far outside of the tribe because then the tribe will reject us.
Mm-hmm.
We want to feel valued and appreciated. I mean, I could go on and on. I'm not a psychologist, but there's so many deep things that go into like where perfectionism comes from
you know, childhood trauma.
Right.
And then just basically some people are just more perfectionistic than others.
Right.
And all of these things. But at the end of the day, the reality is that a lot of people struggle with feeling like what they make isn't good enough.
Right.
So how do you talk to people about that specific issue?
First of all, with alcohol links, let's say, there are so many, as long as people learn how to use color, you can't fail. Because the colors are so magnificent and so vibrant. If you learn the right colors to use, so there you're already half your battle is won. And, you know, that's why there's so many, you know, I find when I give offline classes, people just start throwing colors down and they make mud. But when you use the right colors, it's just gorgeous. It's gorgeous. See, and then you can use gold, and then you can use doodling on top of it. Then you can use stencils, because stencils makes everyone feel like an artist. If you can't do that, there are a lot of ways to do things. And now I've been learning from someone else online a technique to use with alcohol inks, but you don't have to just draw. You can take a picture and you could color it with graphite and put it down and then press on top of it, and you have the picture there to use. There are a lot of crutches where it's still not going to come out like everybody else's, but it's going to allow you to feel successful, because I want people to feel success, and, you know, success breeds success, and it just gives them confidence. I just had recently, this summer, I was doing a class of a bunch of ladies, like a 6-week class, and she made something, and it was with a stencil, but she chose how to do it, and she said, wow, I'm so not artistic. Look how beautiful that is. And it just, like, I love it. I love it with my kids in elementary school. And I love it with my ladies, that there's nothing that makes me feel better. I almost, even better than making my own art. I love just enabling people to be creative and to feel good about themselves through their creativity.
Me too.
What'd you say?
Me too.
Yeah.
I'm more than I like creating my own art. I mean, right. I really thrive in putting this whole thing together, this Fodder School thing. It's like,
right.
It's weird, but it's like, it's as creative of an endeavor to create Fodder School and administer it as it is to actually make art. Like, I get just as much creative happiness out of creating it.
Oh,
so it's like you're getting.
Yeah. Okay, great. I thought I was the only, I thought I was crazy. I thought, wait, Peggy, you're so crazy. I mean, why don't you do more art?
Because you're getting your creative well filled
right.
by creating an opportunity and a course and designing that course, which is a whole creative thing.
Right.
And doing that, that's also creative. I mean, you're right. in the flow, right? When you're working with other people, when
yes.
you're creating that thing, you're also in that flow. So
yes.
Okay, so you're saying, let me just repeat this because this is so important, that if people are struggling with perfectionism, then try to find opportunities where your hand is held enough that you can feel successful.
Right. It's
so
interesting,
you're saying
the way,
instead, hold on. You're yeah. saying instead of trying to overcome and eliminate our own perfectionism and, you know, self-talk ourselves out of perfectionism, which may not even be possible. That's interesting. I hadn't even considered that.
Uh-huh.
Are you saying, like, just maybe take courses where there's more of the opportunity to feel successful?
Yes. Right. Yes. So you have to find something. Maybe you're not going to be able to draw representationally, but you can feel successful. There are so many ways to make beautiful things that will make you feel successful. You have to find those.
So do you think that possibly what's going on with people who are having a block based on perfectionism is that their level of expectation of themselves is like out of line, and that they should try to back up like many, many steps, like maybe start with something like Fodder School or start with something like your alcohol inks. Don't go to your painting portraits in a Renaissance style and then comparing yourself to Renaissance painters.
Right. Well, for sure, if you're going to compare yourself, because that is the death of creativity. Comparison is the death of creativity. And I know that wasn't, I didn't make that up. I got it somewhere. I read it, but it, and I was saying never compare yourself, because that's the death knell of creativity. And there is definitely a saying out there, comparison is the
thief of joy. Thief of joy.
Okay. Yeah. So
I'm going to challenge you on this. Okay. Here okay. I am. I'm going to challenge you. This is such a fun conversation.
Okay.
Okay. Comparison is the thief of joy. We all know. Oh, it's also like the comparison trap. Don't compare yourself. Okay. That's the ideal. That's the standard, is we don't want to compare ourselves. But here's the reality. I think most people are doing it subconsciously. It's not really 100% in their control. It's happening at a level that they may not even fully be able to stop themselves. So as much as we say, like, stop comparing yourself and that'll fix your problem, I want to talk about reality and what we're really capable of.
Right. So in my elementary school class, I do see this. So what I'll do is I'll take a kid who's having a very hard time. They just want to be able to paint like another kid, and I'll try to get them to do something else. Go do construction, or let's do some sewing. I think it's important to find the area that you can be successful at, because everybody has something. Or sometimes somebody might say, okay, I don't want to compare myself. I want to see if I can do that. Okay, good. Go ahead. Try to see if you can do what she did. If you can, good. Go ahead. And now move on to something else. You see that you were able to do that. Now find something else that you can be successful on your own. Or you did that. Now make it your own. You were able to copy what she did. Make it your own. Add something. Cut it up. Do something different to make it your own. That also adds success. And, you know, the comparison is, I want to be able to just see that if I can't do it, okay, let's see what I can be successful at. But if I want to see if I can do what she can do, let me try to do it. And then either it'll make me feel successful and I'll be able to go off on my own, or else I'll take that and I'll change it around. And I'll look around. I'll look online. There's a million different ideas. I can try this. I can try that. I can mix and match them, make a whole, mixture of it. And, you know, it's a journey.
That's really helpful. I'm just going to repeat what you just said again, because I can see different people that I've come into contact with and how these different ideas could help people. Okay. So if you approach it from a place of understanding that, okay, I may need to tone it down a lot, like my expectations of myself, what I can do. I know that I struggle with perfectionism. So I may need to decide to take something that is maybe not as challenging to me as I feel that I want to do. But knowing that if I do something on the simpler side, I always have the opportunity to make it my own. And that will build that feeling of confidence and success and joy. And it is just crazy to me how true that is.
Yes.
I just think about my own experiences as a student in fodder school. And nothing about fodder school is super challenging. It's specifically not, you know, super difficult, really technical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It's all like people are always asking me, do I need to register for fodder school 1 and do fodder school 1 before I can register for fodder school 2?
Mm-hmm.
And I always tell everyone the same thing. Every single month, we're starting again.
Mm-hmm.
Every single month, someone who's never picked up art supplies could come in and watch those lessons and make the project that month. There's nothing so technically difficult about what we do in fodder school that makes it like, oh, you have to have all this like past experience and experience that builds and builds and builds. And there are ways that things build, because the more you do, the more you have access to build something else. But ultimately, it's pretty simple techniques that people then in the project, that's where the creativity really starts to come in, because people can blow out their project as big as they want to, or they can keep it really simple and just do exactly what the teacher kind of demonstrated.
Right.
Or they can start adding, if they want, adding their own style, adding their own, you know, pieces, parts from other fodder school lessons.
Right.
Perhaps creating something entirely different because they were like, oh, well, I've already, you know, I've already like I know there are lessons coming up in fodder school too, where we're going to be creating wall art. And I'm already thinking about me again, me as the student. It's like, okay, maybe I don't want to create wall art, but maybe I want to do like an accordion book, because I love accordion books and I want to like do something a little different. And I really love the style of this artist and I really want to learn from them. But like, I don't really have any wall space left in my house. So I want to do like a book. So anyway, I think that a lot of what you're saying is going to resonate with a lot of people who listen to this podcast. You've got some really, really, really good ideas and experience with artists. So I don't want to go on too much longer just because my kids are about to walk in the door to school. But if there was something that you could say has been super helpful to a lot of people that you've come into contact with, like what would you say is your biggest kind of piece of advice? And maybe we've already touched upon it and you're just going to repeat it.
Right. So what I try to do is, it's funny thing is, I discovered in middle of my alcoholic journey that Sharpies are alcohol inks. And there are a lot of different kinds. I bought a couple of different brands also on Amazon, alcohol inks. But I found that was very interesting to start with Sharpie. So like I have on my website, Creativity Reignited, I have, if you sign up, you get like a free video with 6 activities on how to start just with Sharpies. A lot of people don't know that they're alcohol inks. Use alcohol inks, alcohol ink markers with some alcohol, and you can get some very beautiful effects. And then once you get on my list, and then you see, I could take you on, you know, on a journey. So that is a good, that's a good way to start in terms of alcohol inks, if you're interested in, you know, in starting with alcohol inks. So you could dip your toe into it. There are people that, the truth of the matter is, if somebody has asthma, alcohol inks probably wouldn't work for them. There are people like on the groups, alcohol ink groups, there are a lot of people that get crazy about using a respirator. I only use a respirator if I do like the wispies, where you use a lot of alcohol. So there are some people that are very sensitive and need to use a respirator. And some people, there's a lot of arguments online, as you can imagine. There are some people who never would do it. You know, but if you do have asthma, it's like alcohol, the same way that alcohol can affect you, the alcohol ink. Just, you know how you smell the Sharpies, it has a certain smell.
Oh, I'm very well aware. I can only tolerate a little of alcohol ink. Right. I have like sensory things where it just overwhelms me, the smell of it. So it's like, I could do it for a little bit, but I don't love, it's not like a medium where I personally, like, I know there's people who love it. Clearly you look on, you know, Instagram, there's so many people who love alcohol inks, and clearly the smell does not bother them the way the smell affects me.
Or they wear a respirator. Or they wear a respirator. Yeah.
So you just have to kind of know.
Right.
Like, or they maybe do it outside. That's like another thing.
Right.
So, okay. Right. So your big idea, your big advice was Sharpies can be used for alcohol ink.
To start.
Hello?
Yeah. You there?
Oh, yeah, I'm here. Yeah. So keep going on that. So
I'm just saying, if you want to start, my thing is, if you want to start with alcohol inks, I would say start with Sharpies, unless you have alcohol inks. You want to start dripping. It has to be on non-porous surfaces. But what happens is you soon run out of direction. What should I do? So you can sign up for my email and you'll get more direction. But if you want to do other stuff, if you want to, like, you know, fodder school, obviously, if there's people that are listening to this podcast, they're very well aware of fodder school, but there is so much out there. There's some jelly plate printing is amazing. There are so many ways to get involved, regular printmaking. You know, there's the more crafty things, the stained glass, there's basket weaving. I mean, it's endless. You know, if you want to learn how to paint, you want to learn how to draw, there's everything out there. Just go do this thing, right?
So before I let you go, I just want you to elaborate on that one point. You said something about how human beings need to be creative, that it fulfills something very important for us. So can you just tell us your thought on that?
Well, my thought on that really is we are created, just to go a little bit into, okay, God created us to be in his image, right? And he creates, he creates. And we, if we're supposed to imitate him, we're supposed to be creative.
Wow.
And that is the never best. What?
I never, ever considered that.
Because that's really the truth, because he created the world. He's always recreating us, and the best way for us to imitate him is to create and to be creative. And that's in, you know, any in God's image, anybody who can appreciate that there is a God. But if you don't, creativity is great, and is great for your mental health also.
Well, I think even if you're not a religious person, you could be an atheist, an agnostic. I think that the idea, like, even if you're like, I don't really know if there's a God, I don't really know if God created us or what God created, I think you can still appreciate that something created us.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, creativity, right? Okay.
Maybe this is very interesting. Or, you know, like, again, you don't have to believe to contemplate something. So it's like, okay, what if there was a higher power that created us? How does that relate to my own creativity? And I've never, ever heard what you're talking about or thought about it in that way. And I just think that that is really interesting. Like, what you're saying is, like, our reason for being is to be creative. That is, I think a lot of people are going to have, like, light bulbs going off as far as, why do I feel this incredible pull toward art and creativity?
Right. Because we need to create. We're really supposed to be godlike, and God creates. So we need to create. There's a lot of different kinds of creativity. You know, there's...
Right. People could be musicians. Right. Or gardeners and cooks.
Right.
And our thing happens to be colors and artist materials and all that stuff. But ultimately, it's what everyone is doing here.
Right.
Is creating something. So, okay, tell us now what your website is, how people can find you, how they can find you on Instagram or Facebook or wherever. Okay. So what is your website?
Okay, my website is creativityreignited.com. And that's where you go. You can go to get my my free video, 20-minute video. I'm on Instagram at Creative Alcohol Inking, and on Facebook too. I haven't been very active on Facebook and Instagram. I've been rethinking how I'm going to be doing this, but I'm going to be coming back in probably more in this line of allowing people to just be creative through the, tapping into your creativity through the alcohol link. So I'm going to be coming back in a different way, but I'm still there. I have lots of posts on Instagram and Facebook at Creative Alcohol Linking, and the website is creativityreignited.com.
All right. So people know where to find you. And if they are like, wow, that is really interesting, I want to try my hand at alcohol links as a way to ignite my creativity because I'm feeling super blocked,
right?
Then this is a wonderful opportunity for people. So
right.
I really appreciate you. You were unrelenting in a really healthy way in trying to get my limited attention. And you did it. You're going to be on the podcast.
Okay, great. Okay, thank you so much, Wendy.
Thank you. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Okay, take care.
Okay, bye. Bye-bye.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Show Up or Shut Up with Wendy Solganik. If you've made some art or craft while you listened, take a photo of it, post it to Instagram, and tag me at willa.wanders so I can see what you were up to. And if you feel like what we talked about here spoke to you today, please hit the subscribe button so that you will be the first to know about new episodes of this podcast. Have a wonderful day. Go create something, anything, and I hope you find your flow.